It is my great pleasure to introduce our speaker for today. Jim Demery is the founder of Understand Us, a mental health initiative. He is younger than I am, and a graduate of the University of Regina. Jim is focused on growing Understand Us into a Saskatchewan-based mental health foundation that changes the current reality of health for our youth. Understand Us is a mental health initiative based out of Regina, and I understand they strive to improve the health and understanding of individuals with mental health barriers, in turn removing the stigma attached to us. Jim, you can tell us more, I'm sure.
So you have me for about 20 minutes today. I'm going to do a little presentation about my personal story, why I started to understand is what we do, talk a little bit about the judgment versus the understanding that comes with mental illness, and then I'm going to talk about anxiety specifically because that's what I deal with. So I lived a normal childhood. I had a good family. I did well in school. I had friends. I played sports, did well in sports. But throughout my whole life and my whole childhood, I always had a sense of discomfort and a sense of worry and almost a sense of panic that was always with me. And when I was a kid, I didn't know that it was any different than anybody else. I thought everybody must feel like this because I didn't have any reason to believe otherwise. And when I went into high school, it started to get a little bit worse. And my friends started noticing and saying things like, oh, Jim, you need to let us have some fun, or you need to stop being the mother of the group, and started making comments. And I realized at that moment that, hey, maybe I was starting to be a little bit different than other people. And then I went into university and it got a little bit worse, but I got through university and I was hired to open up a restaurant in the southeast of Regina, Earl's Restaurant. And at 26, I was done school, put a lot of pressure on myself to succeed and open up this business, and my stress started to rise and rise and rise and rise, and I got to the point where I just couldn't function anymore. I kind of had a crash. So I was vomiting every morning, I couldn't sleep, I wasn't eating, I wasn't functioning. So I went to my sister and I said, hey, I need some help. She took me to the doctor and he diagnosed me with generalized anxiety. And so in that moment, I remember feeling a couple things. The first thing I felt was relief and a bit of happiness, because for the first time in my life, I understood why I felt the way I felt my whole life. But the second thing I realized was I also felt a lot of fear and a lot of shame, because now I was diagnosed with a mental illness and I was worried about the unknown of that and what was going to happen and was I going to be able to control it and who would I turn into. And I had all these unknown fears because I was never taught about it. And when I was leaving the doctor's office, I had a choice to make. I decided I could give in to the fear and the shame and keep it to myself and not talk about it, or I could express myself openly to people around me and let them know how I was feeling and what my diagnosis was. And because of who I am, being an open person, an honest person, I tried to talk to people about it. And when I talked to them about it, I received some very distinct reactions that stick to me to this day. And the first reaction I got was surprise. So a lot of people would say, Jim, I've known you for 10 years. There's no way I would have thought you would be someone with a mental illness. And this showed me that A, I wasn't being authentic to everyone around me and letting them know how I felt. And B, that people only perceive mental illness as a debilitating or extreme illness. That people do not believe that people functioning every day that have relationships and that have careers and that, you know, have a family and are functioning every day can still deal with that illness. And that kind of stuck to me, and I wanted to change that reality moving forward. The second reaction I got was thankfulness. So people would pull me aside at a party or at a gathering or on social media. They would reach out to me and they'd say, hey, thanks a lot for talking about your anxiety. I know exactly what you're going through. I deal with the same things, and it means a lot that you talk about it. And this showed me a couple things. A, that when you open up about something that isn't talked about, that it's a form of leadership that can allow people to feel more comfortable about it. And the second thing is that there are a lot of people that deal with it that we're not talking about it. And that kind of scared me, and I wanted to change that moving forward. The third reaction I got was resistance. So some people, not the majority, but some people would say, Jim, I know people with real diseases, and you're just playing a victim, or you're just making it up. And This stuck to me because I was someone who was okay with dealing with, I guess, conflict or resistance, but I still remember thinking to myself that why is it not okay for me to just express how I feel and what I'm going through? And why do I deserve this resistance? And I thought a lot of people, if the first step that they chose to do was talk about how they felt, and if that was the reaction they got from people, that would lead to isolation and shame instead of being open and continuing the conversation. So I wanted to change that. And the fourth reaction I got was dismissal. So this was my mom. She's a beautiful woman, never dealt with mental health barriers or any illness. And she would say things like, "Oh, Jim, life's too short to worry all the time," or, "You know, what do you have to be stressed about?" and stuff like that. And it was just a way for her to give me some guidance or to ease my stress or to try to help. But what it was doing was kind of dismissing how I felt. Because obviously if I have the stress disease, my first reaction would be like, I'll just float stress so that it's cured and that I can move on with my life. But that wasn't how it was. I didn't have that choice. So with those four reactions that I received when I opened up about it, I realized that the way we discuss mental illness is incorrect. And then my dad passed away in 2011, and when I was kind of reflecting on his life, I found myself not only mourning his death, but I found myself mourning his life, because he dealt with depression his whole life and never talked about it, never dealt with it. And in his generation, he would be 70, around 70 today, I believe. So that's his generation. That it wasn't okay for anyone to say that they were weak, or that he would rather go through life unhappy instead of dealing with it in fear of looking weak to his peers. And I felt like in honor of him, I wanted to change that. So I took the motivation of doing something in my dad's honor, and I took the reactions that I received from my own experience, and I started Understand Us. So Understand Us is a mental health initiative based out of Regina that focuses on four main areas. We do youth education in schools and businesses and universities and online resources to create a positive conversation around mental health. We do awareness campaigns with the youth to try to spread that message to a lot of people. We sell clothing as an act of fundraising and a conversation starter and a visible unifier for mental health. And then we do community events. So anything where there's a big group of community people, we want to be there and be a voice for mental health. And so we've found some success in focusing on those four things, because that's what we do best. There's many areas of the mental health world. There would be early awareness, education, and prevention. That's where we exist. Then there'd be early diagnosis and treatment. And then there'd be long-term and care and emergency services. And those are the three extremes, I suppose, of the mental health world. And we very much focus on the awareness and prevention. So when I was deciding on how Understand Us was going to look and how it was going to feel, I realized through my reactions that I received that there is a stigma attached to mental health and mental illness. And what a stigma is would be a judgment that's not based on fact that usually portrays something in a negative way. And I felt that that was there with mental illness. And the four reasons that I believe there's a stigma attached to mental illness is, the first, it's invisible. So when you see me, you can't say, "Oh, that is what disease he has. I know exactly what he's going through." The only way it becomes visible is through my behavior. So if I start acting strange, weird, abnormal, what people would consider abnormal, then they'll say, "Oh, that's, now he has a disease." But when it shows up as behavior, you believe that my behavior is always a choice and that I can choose to behave a different way. But it's not always the case when your behavior is driven by your thoughts, which affect your feelings, which affect your emotions, which drive your behavior. And that is a big cycle with mental illness. So people don't understand it, and there's a stigma that is created about it. The second reason is there's no proof of it. So I can't go to the doctor, get a CAT scan, a blood test, or an ultrasound, and come back to you and say, "Hey, look, I have level 3 depression or anxiety." It just doesn't exist. So a lot of people can say, "Oh, you're just making it up," or "You just need to toughen up," or you're looking for attention, because I can't prove that I have it to anybody. It's just how I feel. And that can prolong the stigma as well. The third reason is we only deal with it when it becomes debilitating. So the way we view mental illness traditionally is someone who is debilitated, non-functioning, hospitalized, homeless, not such an extreme case. And that's a small portion of the mental health spectrum. The mental health spectrum is anywhere from someone who is functioning to someone who is non-functioning, and that's where we need to start talking about it, because then we would understand the full spectrum of it, and the stigma would start to decrease. And the fourth is the imagery. So if you Google depression and go to images, you'll see a lot of dark negative images. And I've suffered from anxiety and mental illness my whole life, and I've never looked like these people in these images where I'm in a bathtub with a single tear down my face and the lights are off and however else they portray it. And this sometimes can be an accurate depiction of how it feels, but if I was a 14-year-old kid starting to deal with the early emotions of mental illness and I was Googling this and I saw that as the imagery, I would run as far away from that as possible, and it would lead to, again, isolation and not being open about it. So it can be damaging. So everything Understand Us does, we want to try to change that stigma. So we can't make it visible physically, but the one thing we can do is talk openly about it and how it feels and what we go through. And so we allow people to share stories on our site to try to make it visible so people will start understanding it. There is no proof of it. But again, if we start talking about it in a very intelligent way and open and honest way, people will start to understand how to identify it and how, what to do about it, and then we can start kind of helping those individuals dealing with it. And with the imagery, everything that we do tries to be youthful, fun, have a positive feel to it, not because we think it's the only way that or mental illness shows up, but we think that it counteracts that negative view and the negative imagery that exists from it. Okay? I'm going to check my time here. Lots of time. Okay, so when we talk about anxiety, a lot of times I ask people what it feels like when they feel anxious. And they will say things like, well, I start to sweat. I can't focus. I feel nauseous. My muscles get tense. My heart rate raises. And these are all things that is true. That is exactly what happens to your body when you're going through an anxious state. But what those things are is your body protecting itself. So traditionally, when you would get in a situation where you'd have to, it's called fight or flight mode, you'd have to fight or run away from a fear or a danger, your body would kick into protection mode and it would send blood to its essential organs, which would make you feel a little nauseous. Your heart rate would go up, it would send adrenaline to your body because you might have to fight or run away. Your muscles would get tense because you'd be in a posture that had to protect itself. You wouldn't be able to focus on multiple things because your brain only focuses in on the one danger that is in front of you. This is all natural, and we all have a sense of natural anxiety that exists within us because that's our body's way of protecting ourselves. But for some people, the difference between me and them is that they live in a natural, relaxed state. Their level of natural baseline normal anxiety is low. And the way, and their anxiety only rises with a trigger. So something that causes them anxiety could be public speaking, writing a big test, going for a job interview, whatever it's going to be. And these things start causing anxiety. And if you can trace that feeling of anxiety back to a trigger, and the response is a rational feeling, so I have a funeral to go to and I feel upset or I feel anxious, well, that's a normal reaction to that. So that doesn't mean that anyone has a mental illness or that anyone is dealing with anxiety or depression. It just means they're going through normal things in life. But for me, when I knew I had a problem was I could be sitting on a beach in Mexico, not at work, with a beautiful girlfriend, sipping a margarita in the sun, and I felt those feelings of anxiety. So I felt the same way that person did going to that funeral or going to that job interview or going to write a big test. And that's when I realized that I was different. And that's what anxiety feels like to me. So I always describe it in a water in a glass example. So for those people that are laid back, natural feeling of relaxation, that don't get uptight about a lot of things, I envy those people, by the way. So if anyone is here, high five to you, and I love you. And I envy you. But so if the water is the stress and the glass is the person, that person might have that much anxiety naturally when they wake up. And then as they go through their day and they get in a fight with their significant other, or they have a bad day at work, or something personal happens to them in a negative way, or they have a lot on their plate, their stress rises and rises and rises, but it never hits the top of the glass because they start with such a lower level of anxiety. But for me, when I wake up with my anxiety, my brain somehow triggers itself to think that it's in fight or flight mode all the time, and I don't know why it does that, but it does that. This is how I feel naturally. That's how much water is in my glass. So for me, I live the same life as that person. I go to work and then my boss yells at me and then someone cuts me off in traffic. And either way, I have no water left. But just imagine that it starts getting to the top and starts overflowing. That's when debilitating anxiety kicks in and you start isolating yourself. You start removing yourself from situations. You start protecting yourself, and it starts altering your personality sometimes because you're in protection mode. So the key about that is that I'm no different than that person that starts with less anxiety. What affects me and what affects that person are the exact same. I just have less room in my glass to deal with it. And that's what my disease is, and that's how it feels. So in this moment, when you're dealing with anxiety, you have three options. And I always teach this to kids because it's a simple way to communicate it, is that you can slow the drip of water into your glass. That's one technique. You can build a bigger glass so you can give more room to yourself in your glass, or you can drain the water from your glass. And that's how I've managed my anxiety and still been successful, I suppose, and never let it be too debilitating to me, is from really managing those three things. So the first is slowing the drip of water in your glass. So what this talks about is that we all have things that we do in our lives and that we have in our lives, and the things that we can control and things that we can't control. And throughout your day, you are going to be around family. You don't always choose your family. You can't always control that. We have to pay taxes. We have to make a little bit of money. Kids have to go to school and get a high school education. Those are things that you have to build resiliency around because they're things that you do every day. But a lot of us are surrounded by negative people that add a lot of water to our glass. That's a choice, and you can surround yourself with more positive people. How you treat others and how they treat you is a big form of that water going in your glass. A lot of people take on too much, or they're getting involved in activities that aren't meant for them, or that aren't their natural happy place, and that adds a lot of stress. Or some people are people pleasers and they say yes to everything, and all of a sudden water's going in their glass and they can't control it. So it's super important to monitor what's causing you stress in your life, and removing things that you can control, or any negative acts that are causing you unnecessary stress and water in that glass. And that's one thing I've done. Second thing is building a bigger glass. So if you can't slow the drip of water going in your glass, you better build a bigger glass to hold it. And what we talk about here is resiliency, perspective, and coping mechanisms. So for me, resiliency is when you feel a fear and it's filling the gap between fear and the effort that you use to get over it. So for me, the first time someone asked me to do a talk in front of people, I was like, no chance. It's like, I'm not going to be good. I'm scared of it. Kids are scary to me. I'm not going into that class. I have no idea what I'm doing. And I said no, and I said no, and I said no. And then eventually someone's like, just come do it for me. And I did it for a friend. And at the end, they were like, hey, that was pretty good. The kids seemed to get something from it. I enjoyed listening to you speak. And then all of a sudden, my fear to do that talk was less. And all I did was just force myself to do it and get over it. And once you get to the other side of that, the fear is less, and your glass seems bigger, like you can handle more. But it's a lot of times people don't jump over that fear and fill that gap between that fear and the effort. And that's one thing I did to be resilient. Another thing I do is with anxiety is that a lot of times you have irrational thoughts. So you'll think, oh, my friend doesn't like me, hypothetically. And there is no proof that your friend doesn't like you. There is no reason why your friend wouldn't like you. But for some reason, it's a feeling that you get because your body's in such an anxious state that you have to start filling it with reasons. So it must be because I think this guy doesn't like me. And so to gain perspective, what I do is I talk to people that are outside of the anxious state and people that are in a rational state. And I'll say, hey, for some reason, I think this friend doesn't like me. And that person will, a lot of times, will say, well, why do you think that? Prove it to me that that person doesn't like you. And I can't prove it because there is no proof. There's no reason. And after talking to that person and them calming me down, all of a sudden I have a different perspective and outlook. And all of a sudden my glass gets bigger because that isn't shrinking me as a person anymore, or not allowing me to have room for that water. And that's gaining perspective. And once you start building a bigger glass, all of a sudden the stress around you is less, because you can now cope and deal with everyday life, as well as the things that pop up along the way. And the last thing I do is I drain the water. So what draining the water is being able to recognize that we all have things that decompress us, that de-stress us, that bring us happiness, that bring us joy. It's very important to have a list and things that do that for you, because as your day goes on, stress rises. and we all need to reset. So this could be art, this could be church, this could be friendships and being social, this could be crafts, this could be any kind of hobby, working out, exercise, nature. All these things are things that help people get through these times. And a lot of us have things that we love and we don't even know we love them. Or over time we lose those things that brought us organic joy because of time or commitments. And it's very important to know those things that make you feel happy and decompressed, and have a list of them and use them every day to drain the water from your glass. So the next day you wake up, you have more room to take on the day, because with anxiety it can pile up and pile up. And if your glass is overflowing for too long, it can be debilitating and it can be dangerous. So with that combination, that's kind of how I've managed it and how we're talking to people about managing it. And I think it's very important. The one thing that you have to consider with that method is you can't just pick one of those. I did a talk at Kinexus Bank, and one guy came up to me after and he was like, man, I know exactly what you go through. My anxiety's going and going and going, and all I keep doing is building a bigger glass and being resilient and sucking it up. And that's okay for a certain amount of time, but eventually his glass is going to explode, because that can't be the only method. Is I'll just suck it up, I'll be resilient, I'll gain perspective, because that runs out eventually. So if he's not draining it with healthy outlets, it's not going to work. If you slow the drip of water going in your glass by avoiding some negative people and not taking on too much, but there's still natural anxiety going in, and you're never draining it with things that make you happy or that de-stress you, eventually that glass is going to overflow and it's going to be debilitating for you again. So you need to do a combination of all three in order to manage it. And we think it's super important. So when it comes to the goal of Understand Us, at the end of the day, I know the way we talk about mental illness is incorrect, and it's very isolating and it's very misunderstood, and I want to change that reality. But I also think that over time we can allow people to actually live a happier, better, more fulfilled life if we can allow them and give them tools to deal with it. And we are very far behind on dealing with it and coping with it, that I think a very important aspect of it is the conversation and that side of it, which is why we focus on that. But I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm not a counselor. We don't necessarily have support groups. It's not what we're focused on or what we're good at. So we try to focus on the prevention and the early education. Okay.
I thank you very, very much for a wonderful presentation.
Thank you very much.